This is Aging by the Bay, here to provide families in the San Francisco Bay Area pertinent information about healthy aging practices and services. Your hosts are Michael Medeiros and Tom DeZeo of Comfort Care Home Care.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Aging by the Bay, where we talk about the joys and some of the challenges of growing older in the Bay Area. We talk to local experts, regional experts, and national experts about what they see happening as people age, as well as the services that are available here that you or your loved ones may or may not be aware of. We're your hosts for Aging by the Bay. I'm Mike Mindaros, along with Tom DeZale. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
We're doing great right now, too. It looks like this year is almost coming close to an end. Any thoughts or regrets for 2017?
I'm looking forward to 2018. It's going to be a positive year. Mm-hmm. And so I think you start off with that mindset and you just take it away.
Exactly, too. You know, whatever year it may be, we know that there's always a better year out there to do today and tomorrow. So let's go look for a happy 2018 for all those listeners out there.
Very good.
All right. But first, we need to thank our show sponsor. That's Comfort Care Home Care. They are the ones who make this show possible. Comfort Care provides the care you need in the best place of all, your home. Comfort Care. You can call them at 877-430-4942 or visit their website at comfortcare.com. That's comfortcare.com. To find out how one of their caregivers can assist you and your loved one to live safely and independently at home, Comfort Care is truly helping you live your best life possible. Tom?
Yes, Mike. So today we are going to do a follow-up add-on from a series that we did with Dr. Leal Duncan, who was an MD. And Dr. Duncan covered the End of Life Option Act. And what we are doing today is we've invited Dr. Michelle Petacolis, who's been on the show previously. She's a PhD, and her focus is grief and loss coaching. And what I wanted to do today is follow up on death and dying from a psychosocial aspect. Michelle, welcome again.
Thank you, Tom. I always enjoy coming on your show.
Great. Well, can you first start off with just giving us a little bit of background about you?
Sure. So I got into this whole arena, I started back 1998. Both my parents died in the same year.
Sorry to hear that.
It was quite a shock. They died 6 months apart. Sometimes that happens when people
right.
are married.
Right, hear that often.
They do that. And I was totally unprepared for the experience. So I was emotionally ripped apart.
Sure.
It's like, whoa. And in the midst of that, there was this awareness of how truly powerful this was, and this awareness of why had I not known this was coming down the road? Why was I so unprepared? And that was what led me to basically produce a documentary film series called Secrets of Life and Death. I wanted to open up the dialogue, to get people to talk about this passage, this life passage that we all go through, but we sweep it under the carpet and pretend it isn't happening.
Sure.
And it can happen at any time. So that has been part of my mission, is to encourage people to talk about it so that they aren't so shocked like I was, that they can take steps that will not only help them prepare to have the kind of final passage that they want, but that they will be able to heal, finish up business, and get all the gifts that are actually available.
Right, right. Now, Michelle, since this act, this End of Life Option Act, has occurred, what has been your role in how it's impacted folks?
I like to help people look at all sides of the experience of dying. I hesitate when I think of the possibility of people jumping into using the pill to get out of the situation, to avoid what might be a really powerful and positive experience.
Okay.
So let me elaborate on that.
Sure.
I have often asked the question in groups that are looking at facing death, how would you like to die? What would be your best case scenario? And invariably, the majority of people will say, I want to die in my sleep, totally unaware. Now, by the way, that is the worst way to go for your loved ones that are left behind.
How so?
Because it's such a shock to wake up and find the person that you love dead when you're not prepared, when there is when there isn't a trajectory, when they haven't had time to realize you're going.
Right. I got it.
So I asked one of my clients recently, I said, well, how do you want to go? And of course she said, I want to die in my sleep. I just want to, I don't want to be there when it happens. And then she thought about it for a while. She had lost her husband 20 years ago. And in his final days, he still was cognizant. He died really quickly. He had pancreatic cancer. They had the best time, the most meaningful, most loving time together. And she remembered that. And she said, you know what? I do not want to put that on my son, who is the closest person to her since she lost her husband. She said, I don't want him to find my dead body, you know, even how many days later. That would be the worst thing of all. And she totally changed her mind. She said, you know what? I don't want the dying to be a long process, but I want to be cognizant. I want to be aware, and I want to have those final loving moments with my son.
That makes sense. But, you know, when you talk about, you had mentioned pancreatic cancer, that could be a very devastating illness to deal with. Anytime you have cancer, there's pain involved in the end stages. And so when folks decide that they no longer want to deal with their terminal illness, how should the family manage through that? I would envision that there's probably a lot of struggle for families when this issue comes up, and especially with this act, because from everything I gathered from the act, it's really about the patient making the decision, and it's about the patient engagement around this decision, not the family. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct.
So the family really has no say in this, right?
Well, in terms of the procedure of the act, no. But in terms of the impact on the patient, huge.
Right. Right. So how, I mean, if I were to come to you and say, Michelle, my dad has just decided that he's going to end his life because he has a terminal illness, and I really don't know how to deal with it. How would you instruct a family how to manage through this process?
Conversation. Ask questions. Be curious. Don't condemn. Don't judge. Be really, truly curious what's going on. Because sometimes the decision to choose the act, there's something else underneath. Fear of being a burden, fear of losing capacity.
Okay.
And maybe if you have a conversation and you bring those fears up and you put them out on the table, some of them may actually go away.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Or maybe some of them could be managed better.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, if it's fear of pain, you really want to look at that. Now, there are some illnesses where there's no doubt in my mind that taking advantage of that act is the way to go. I totally appreciate that. What happens often, though, because of the rules around this act, is that oftentimes that window of opportunity for utilizing it goes away before people even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to have mental capacity.
Right.
And oftentimes, if your terminal illness is progressing, it sometimes progresses really fast. And when the pain comes in, then they start giving you drugs to manage the pain, and you no longer have capacity to make that decision anymore.
Right, right. So in your estimation, do you think it really should be a family decision?
In my estimation, it is a family decision.
But what about that scenario where the patient just decides without informing the family and starts moving this forward, and the family finds out about it, and the family's disturbed about it?
Again, they need to have a conversation, and it wouldn't hurt to have a mediator involved if there is friction in the family.
Uh-huh.
Because the worst thing that people can do is come in with a judgmental attitude.
Right.
You have to come in with an attitude of curiosity.
Right.
Hey, Dad, or Mom, I understand that you've gone ahead and gotten a prescription for this drug. Can you tell me what's going on for you? How do you feel about this? What have your experiences of death been? What are you afraid of? What do you think this is going to provide for you? And can we, if this is your choice, and by the way, I totally respect an individual's choice in that this matter, how can we make this so it's wonderful for all of us? Can we make a ritual out of this? Can we involve the family so that it actually is a positive experience?
So what you're describing is a very rational approach. You know, what I find is I see a lot of families that are, you know, sometimes irrational,
right,
and sometimes very reactive to
yes.
situations
yes.
like this.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's almost like I would envision a mediator or someone
yes.
to basically help navigate
that's
this.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's where I would come in.
Right.
I would, whoever is having problems with it, the worst thing you can do is go in with a judgmental attitude. So what's underneath those judgmental attitudes? What's going on? Maybe it's fear of loss of your parent. Maybe it's that there's unfinished business and you're afraid you're not going to get that taken care of. Or you have some anger or you feel out of control. All those emotions need to be looked at, but they should be looked at. And so if this provides an opportunity for looking at that stuff, wonderful.
Right, right. Folks, we're here today with Dr. Michelle Petacolis, and we're having a discussion around death and dying and the psychosocial aspect of that for both families and loved ones and patients. Michelle could be reached at 510-529-4806. Her website is www.secretsoflifeanddeath.com. Michelle is a grief and loss coach and could help folks navigate through some of these tough decisions. We're talking about today the End of Life Option Act that is in place in California since 2016, I believe. And that's an option for folks who are terminally ill. And it's often a challenge from a psychosocial component for the family, and that's what we're discussing today. So, Michelle, once the family decides to be rational about this, how do you see it going? Does the patient and the family come to terms and come to an agreement and move forward, or is it a total breakdown?
Again, it depends on the family. I lost my cousin last year, and he had prostate cancer, and he had expressed to his family that he wanted to take advantage of the End of Life Option Act. He didn't move fast enough. He didn't expect his illness to go that fast, but he wanted to die with dignity.
Right.
He didn't want to be in that position where, you know, his children had to be around and take care of him and see him lose his capacity, and
right.
and he lost that opportunity. It
yeah,
went
yeah.
too fast,
right.
and that's one of the main things that happens. They were totally on board with what he wanted.
Okay.
They loved him. And,
right.
and when you have a healthy family and you're in that place of love, you can understand that somebody would want to go that way.
Yeah.
I remember his son being just really mortified that his father had to go through the indignity of dying.
Yeah.
And I told him, no, don't go there. You don't need to go there.
Mm-hmm.
He had a wonderful death. He had his family surrounded. They loved him. They got the opportunity to accompany him. And he actually went quite fast.
Yeah.
He wasn't in pain. And this is the process of dying. It's fine.
Right. Right. So, you know, when we were having the discussion with Dr. Duncan, she presented some facts to us. And it's actually of the 250,000 deaths last year in California, only 1.3% actually took advantage of this act, and half, 50%, actually went through with it. So that's quite a big drop-off.
Yes, yes.
And I wonder what that's attributed to. Is it that, you know, the process accelerates and you just don't have the time, or is it families getting together and maybe deciding that this isn't the right route?
It could be either one of those.
Yeah.
I remember before the Options Act came in, I had a colleague who told me the story about her father who had a terminal illness and had decided to take his life. So he hinted to his daughters that he was planning on doing it. His daughter shows up at his apartment one day and can't find him, and she opens up the garage. I guess it was his house. And he's in the car with the garage running and the door closed. She freaks, pulls him out, calls 911.
Right.
He's totally pissed off that she's done that.
Oh, boy.
So then she jumps on the bandwagon, does all the research, figures out how to optimize the whole thing tubes putting the fumes in the car.
No.
So she sets this all up, and, you know, she waits, and he's supposed to be dead by now, and she goes over to the house. He's in the house. He's having a cup of coffee. She says, "Dad, what happened?" He says, "Well, it smelled." So then she does more research, and she figures out how to create this cocktail of drugs that'll work. And again, you know, she stays out of the house. His wife, his second wife, she stays out, and they give him time. They come in. He's once again sitting there watching TV. He says, "Well, I don't know whether it didn't work or what it was, but it didn't." After that, he gave up on trying to kill himself and just let nature take its course. It's
interesting story. Yeah, that kind of sums it up. What about coming at it from a religious standpoint? I would envision that there, you know, for families that are extremely religious and following, you know, a tenet, I would assume that this is, you know, counter to what their belief system is.
Absolutely.
So how do we deal with that?
Well, we don't have to deal with it, but they do. And how do they deal with that?
Yeah.
Conversation with the person who's made that decision. And if it's all about tolerance.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's what our country is all about, is religious tolerance.
Right.
And if your loved one has changed their perspective, we have to have tolerance for their choice, their beliefs. We can try and influence them.
Right.
But I would, you know, caution against using shame or using...
Does clergy get involved in this when there's a religious issue?
I would imagine that they do get involved in that.
Yeah, it sounds like difficult terrain to kind of navigate through. You know, if it's against, you know, your religious belief, but yet the patient really wants to, you know, move forward with it. That sounds like a challenge.
It does sound like a challenge, and you always want to go back to the specifics of this. Go back to, why does this person want to do this? Is there a compelling reason? Is it that they just don't want to have to deal with somebody taking care of their toiletry needs, you know?
Right,
or
is it
because they are really about to face a debilitating pain or debilitating and, you know, unfathomable incapacity, like the loss of mental capacity, the loss of being able to even sit up, or you know, literally that they're going to die by drowning in their own fluids.
Right, right.
And that it's just too terrifying for them to imagine that. And so they want to go out in a way that is dignified and loving and safe.
So when families begin to have the dialogue and real discussion ensues, is there a sense of more control around that? Because really, the psychosocial component usually focuses on the lack of control. So when you have the dialogue, do you increase the control?
Either that, or you become more comfortable with not having the control of opening to the journey. I like to encourage people to look at end of life as a journey, as an adventure.
Right.
And that each experience that you have, instead of seeing it as a loss, as seeing it as a new opening.
Okay.
With each door closing, a new door opens.
Right.
And so if you lose your hearing, what sensory awareness do you now have? Do you start to see things more clearly? Do you notice things with your scent or with your hands? How do you adapt? Because the body is an amazing adaptive mechanism in that way. And even if it's only for a short period of time, oh, isn't that interesting? So I had another friend who was dying. She was dying of a really obnoxious cancer. and they had her on a lot of drugs. And I remember her sitting in her hospital bed and trying to think because she had all these drugs. And she said for a moment, oh, that's what that's like. I'm not sure what it was that she got, but she had some sort of realization about how the mind works and how it doesn't work when you're on these drugs, and having this sort of awareness, this
clarity.
And that's what I invite, is look for the adventure.
Right.
Look for what shows up. I imagine that even the people who take the drug, that's an adventure too. It's like, oh, what does it feel like for your body to shut down?
Right, right.
And yes, there may be that visceral fear that kind of comes, that'll come up. But if you have people that are there that love you and reassure you, they can reassure your body.
Sure.
They can reassure you. And then letting go. Oh, what a process. Letting go. That's what death's about, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's letting go.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. Well, on that note, Michelle, we're going to conclude here. I appreciate you coming on the show and having this dialogue with us today. Folks, for those listeners who are interested in gaining some insight into grief and loss counseling, I would advocate you call Michelle at 510-529-4806. Her website is www.secretsoflifeanddeath.com. Michelle, thanks so much, and you have a great day today, and we'll be in touch.
Yes, thank you so much, Tom.
Very good.
Thank you for joining us on Aging by the Bay today. Thank you to our guest, Dr. Michelle Pitsakolas, for joining us today and helping our listeners age better. You can always visit our website at www.secretsoflifeanddeath.com. If you enjoy the show and are getting something out of it, we would really appreciate for you to subscribe to our podcast and leave a review. We are wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, you name it. Or you can listen to this episode or past episodes at agingbythebay.com/shows. A big thank you to our sponsor, Comfort Care Home Care. If you want to be a featured guest or if you have questions for our guests, reach out to us at info@agingbythebay.com. Until next week, everyone, have a great weekend.
This has been Aging by the Bay with Michael Menderos and Tom DeZeo, addressing issues on aging and services for the elderly community. Join us again next week for Aging by the Bay.